Hey there, White Sox fans. The season is almost upon us. I'm here with Super Joe Reeses. We are talking about predictions, what we anticipate this 2021 season playing out as. And accompanying this, or coming up about the same time as this predictions podcast, are going to be a couple articles. One, Joe, who did a fantastic job sort of envisioning how the entire season is going to play out, even doing his sort of like 2020 season fan fiction about how actually the playoffs are going to play out. It's a great piece. Check that out. And then everybody else, the rest of us slackers who didn't want to write a lot, we pretty much just filled out our grid of like who's going to win divisions and who the best Sox player. We're going to get into that. You can look at that article as well. We got a lot of participation from the staff. A lot of varying opinions in some categories. In some others, no, they're pretty much united. But we'll get into that. But first, Joe, welcome. Thanks for joining me again on our Southside Sox podcast.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm very much looking forward to the season, and I'm happy to discuss how I think it'll play out.
Yes, and depending on the order that you're listening, watching, reading this article, you may already be familiar, dear listeners, with how things have played out with the Southside Sox staff predictions. But let's just say generally very bullish staff, extremely bullish on this team. We'll dig into that a little bit. But Joe, tell me how you arrived at your win total for the White Sox and generally, I guess, your level of optimism entering the season.
So my main methodology for finding how many wins I thought they would receive was basically going through each player who I figured would get a substantial amount of playing time this season, kind of ballparking roughly their key statistics for the season, and from there arriving at a general wins above replacement total that I would expect for the player. And from that, I added up everyone's estimated WAR for the season among players with a significant amount of playing time. And I just added that to that 48, to the default 48, as a team with zero wins above replacement would be estimated to get about 48 wins in the regular season. Mm-hmm. So I arrived at roughly 39 WAR for the White Sox, which put me at my 87 and 75 stats or record for the season. And I believe that would be just enough to squeak into the playoffs as a wild card team, as it's a very top heavy league, but I don't think that there's that much. I don't think that it's as competitive as a league compared to the NL. So I think that 87 will barely be enough to get them in.
See, this is why Super Joseph is a kick-ass data analyst, because he goes into all this stuff and says, all right, I'm going to measure the WAR and blah, blah, blah. And I'm, you know, listen, I did not off as you're saying all that, but you know, the rest of us were, you know, I threw darts for God's sake. And probably when you see my predictions, you'll agree, because the shocking part in among, I believe at least at date, we may still get some late entries, but I believe we have 15 people predicting the White Sox season, and somehow 14 have picked the White with varying win totals, have picked the White Sox to make the playoffs. One person hasn't. He'll go unnamed, but that person who might be speaking right now didn't pick the White Sox for the least amount of wins. I believe good friend Tommy Barbie picked the White Sox to win the division at 86 victories, which is, that's bold. I mean, I know the Centrals are craptastic, but to that degree, that's bold. And I'm right there with you, Joe. I see this team being a high 80s wins, but obviously with a lot of variance there, they could easily be well into the 90s, and a number of teams could. The White Sox probably have maybe not as much range as we anticipated them having, say, going into 2020, where it could be, man, I don't know, 95 wins or 75 wins. But there's still a lot of variance in this team. And I just happen to think, even though I think I picked them for one more win than you, I just see the Central and the AL, maybe along with what you're saying, the top heaviness, just sort of not working quite out for them in the way that you see them getting I think we both picked him second place. You see him in the playoffs, yes. And I don't. So I don't know. I feel I'm going to be roasted for the fact that I'm one of 15 so far not to pick the White Sox for the playoffs. But maybe I'm just saying, hey, White Sox, prove something to me. I'm still more stuck in that last week of the regular season in 2020. Everybody else seems to be in the first 7 weeks of the season, which is cool. That's the way you're supposed to do it going into the season. Let's talk a little bit about how you see the division coming together. Is in your mind just a matter of Cleveland, Minnesota, and the Sox fighting it out? And where do you think Detroit and Kansas City play in that?
Well, I think that the main competition for the White Sox would certainly be Minnesota. They're the team that I pretty strongly feel is the team to beat right now in the Central. One of the major wild cards for them would be Nelson Cruz. I feel like someday, certainly he has to kind of fall off the table, but I just kind of have to see it to believe it at this mm-hmm. point. So I'm not predicting a drop off this year for him. And I feel that Jorge Polanco is kind of underrated by what a lot of people are predicting. I think Jorge Polanco is kind of a key player who can make them overachieve compared to expectations this season. And they have enough depth in their rotation. I didn't like the Jay Happ signing for them, especially with the White Sox feasting off left-handers. I mean, I like it in because I'm a White Sox fan, but I didn't like it in terms of something that was beneficial to them. But I still do think that they have enough good pitchers between Berríos and Maeda. And they just have a very balanced lineup. I think they're the team to beat in the Central. Cleveland, I think, is a bit behind both the Sox and the Twins. They could make a surprise run, but I feel pretty strongly that they have lost more than they've gained since the end of last season. And it wouldn't take a miracle by any stretch of the imagination for them to win the division, but I feel pretty strongly to have them as number three in the division this season. And Detroit is on the way up, but they're not there yet. And Kansas City, I just don't think will be close this mm-hmm. year. So it's pretty much a matter of Minnesota, the White Sox, and Cleveland. Those are the only three teams who I think really have a realistic shot in 2021. But Minnesota would be my number one for sure.
I think the division's more bunched than people think. I don't think Detroit and Kansas City can be less of a factor than they were a year ago when the White Sox, for once, just mowed over them. It's not going to be that easy this time around. They're going to play spoiler for all three teams to some degree. I think the division's going to play down. I thought that last year. I thought low 90s wins was going to win it. Obviously, we didn't get to see it play out that way. And as it turns out, if you just take the pace of the teams, I think the White Sox were 95 win pace, and that's playing goofy stuff with numbers, but that puts Minnesota and Cleveland right there too. There is no way the Central Division has three mid to upper 90 win teams in a full season this year. So, you know, I mean, I want to play up the fact that the White Sox were a 95 win team last year, but so there were three of them. That ain't happening. And, you know, I don't know. I see everybody among this top three. I see all of them having an upper hand at some point. And it might just be who rides it out well enough to the way the White Sox didn't last year and almost fell out of the playoffs. And technically in this year's grid, the traditional playoff grid will not make the playoffs. You know, unfortunately they hit the bump at the wrong time. And, you know, maybe this year, if they can orchestrate it, so they're, you know, they don't sort of like, you know, spit the bit at the end of the season, you know, we might see a lot more pleasant outcome the way apparently, again, the vast majority, 90%+ of Southside Sox staff members see it playing out as. Let's talk about, we have a number of different categories. Let's talk about the best player and pitcher you see. You are unique, I believe, at least in the grid as I see it now, in being very bullish on Luis Robert. Tell me why. Obviously, we know at worst, he's going to bring value base running. He's going to bring value defensively. So he's never going to be probably much less than an average player. but you think he can put enough together at the plate that starts to put him into really much a cusp of an all-star player?
I do. And when I was looking at this spreadsheet of our predictions, I was a little bit surprised to see that I was the only one who had him as the most valuable position player on the roster. I understand that why he wouldn't be the most popular pick for that, but I was surprised to see my pick for him being the only one there. And I really like how versatile he is. He provides a ton of value with his glove, and really, if he can just be a little bit more patient at the plate, I think that will go a long way for him. He got off to a very hot start in the 2020 season, and he went on, obviously, the prolonged slump, which in the short season last year really dragged down his stats to pretty much league average at the plate. But I feel that will prove to be a fluke, and I really have confidence in him at the plate. I know that, yeah, it was kind of a bit of a cat and mouse game in his case, where pitchers started to adjust to his approach, and it took him a little while to adjust back to it and kind of adjust back to what pitchers were throwing to him to try and get him out, you know, in September. But in the last week or so of the season and into the playoff series against Oakland, he started heating up again. And a lot of times it can be tough to make adjustments during a rookie season. And I just don't think that the slump that he went in like early September was representative of at all of what we'll see this season from him. I think he'll turn out to be a well above league average hitter. And given his defensive ability, I just think that he has a huge upside and he'll be a lot closer to reaching it this year compared to last year.
It's such a relief, Joe, to be talking about a guy rare in baseball, much less with the White Sox, and maybe the only guy on this roster whose basement can only be so low. Even a guy who I think was the majority pick here, including mine, Yoan Moncada, even he, if everything goes wrong, he's probably not going to give you that. He has the potential of being weaker than an average major league starter. I'm not sure that Luis Robert, he might be the only guy on this roster whose basement, just because of the defense, assuming that can't possibly crash, and base running, is probably going to give him a basement of just being at least an average starter. So certainly you're making a smart play in that, you know, there's a lot of ceiling there for him. Whereas pretty much every other guy on the roster, I think, has a bottom that's like, man, you don't want to look. So one area we agree in terms of best pitcher. This is certainly not a rare pick.
Oh, yes.
A couple of people cut against the Giolito grain, but it seems really clear that he's going into the season as a killer ace, not to play too much into the spring, but he's just been nails this whole Cactus League slate. He looks like he's ready to maybe put together 6 months of pitching that can really keep him all 6 months in a Cy Young discussion, and a top three finish for him as a Cy Young. I think I picked him as Cy. I'm not sure if you did, but it seems like he's ready to take, even though there's not a lot of room for him to step forward, it seems like he's ready even to take that step a little bit further and man a staff as an ace for a team that really is almost expected. If you talk to the Southside Sox staff and a lot of other people around baseball, is maybe their pennant to lose. So you see sort of the same thing where he's going to just give us that little bit more to make him, you know, really maybe the best starter in the game.
Yes, I had him as number three in terms of AL Cy Young voting. So not quite the Cy Young, but he's close as far as I'm concerned. I had him clearing the five WAR mark, the only White Sox player I had doing so. And I just really love Giolito's data-driven approach to pitching. He really knows, against righties, you know, what's the best way to get this player out? You know, what kinds of pitches should I be throwing? What and where does the data say that, you know, I should be throwing the pitch? And like in terms, he just is very well educated as far as where like what, when to throw which types of pitches and where to throw them. And that is something that I very much admire in terms of his skill set. And it really has just been a joy to watch him these past couple of seasons. And as, yeah, it there were a couple of dissenting opinions, you know, having Lance Lynn as the pitcher MVP. But yeah, I like to have bold predictions now and again, but this was just not one that I could do. This was a very easy decision.
Ah, Lance Lynn. All right. Okay. You know, there are a couple guys we might have to talk to after class. It's very clear. There's a couple voters. I think we agree the rest of the way here. I don't even know if it's worth discussing that Garrett Crochet is the strongest rookie on this team. I know there was a lot of support for Andrew Vaughn. That to me seems like nonsense. And I don't think either one are going to have a bad rookie year. Let's not forget Michael Kopech is still technically a rookie as well. But Crochet, I can't fathom him not bringing, even in some weird hybrid role where maybe he doesn't even get close to it. I don't know what his innings limit is. I think we've been assuming it's 100. Even if he doesn't get close to that, in 75 innings, in 50 innings, the guy put together pretty significant value in 10 days last year. And I don't see anything about him that's going to fall off. So we can move quickly on from Crochet. You're welcome to weigh in, but let's also give me your thoughts as well. Crochet, best rookie. Billy Hamilton is the worst player on the team. And that, I think, maybe got the most variance in votes. I don't know if that's worrisome or that's the privilege of having a very strong roster. And worst pitcher, I think we both agreed, even though he is not breaking camp with the team, somehow Ronaldo Lopez will sneak his way into this roster for even a brief period of time and be the worst pitcher on the White Sox. I think we're both confident in that. But thoughts on those three categories, Joe?
Yes, I think that Crochet, even though, like you said, he probably will not get a ton of playing time compared to some of the other rookies on the team. Like, for example, I'd imagine Kopech will get more innings, and Andrew Vaughn and Nick Madrigal are projected to be starters. So they'll have more playing time to accumulate WAR. But I still see Crochet as probably getting more wins above replacement compared to the other ones. I mean, as you said, he is just a strikeout machine, or at least he has been in the little that we've seen of him. And for him to accumulate the amount of value that he did last year in that short of a period of time is remarkable. And there's no indication that it was just simply a fluke, or that, you know, players were hitting it hard but right at the fielders. Like, that wasn't happening. He was just very dominant, and I'm curious to see what hitters will do to kind of adjust to that. But he seems, there are just certain at bats where he just looks completely unhittable,
and he's not just easy. He does have other pitches that are going to keep people on their toes. You know, really, when there's a guy on the team who can throw more than half of his pitches over 100 miles an hour, or whatever the equivalent exit velocity as a hitter is. I don't know if that's 600, whatever it is. When we got a hitter like that, when he's making contact, you know, Luis Robert's most Titanic blasts every time out, then I'll pick somebody other than Crochet. But right now, I think I'm going to give it to the guy who, threw like 54% of his pitches last year.
Right.
More than 100 miles an hour, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. Billy Hamilton, you're not excited about him?
I'm not. Primarily because he just isn't a very good hitter, and a lot of his value in the past has come from his ability to field in center field, which is a much more valuable position than the corner outfield spots, and it's much easier to find players who are capable of playing in left and right compared to center. And with Luis Robert pretty much having center field to himself, Hamilton's time there will certainly be very limited. And for a player whose game was very reliant on his speed throughout the earlier portion of his career, he's likely a little bit past his prime at this point, I would say. And he's still got well above average major league speed, I'm sure, but it isn't quite as dominant of a force as it was a few years ago. And he will have some playing time with good reason with this team, just for depth reasons, of course, with the potential for injuries, there is a spot for him on this roster, but overall, I'm not very excited about him.
Yeah. And he's a tricky pick. And I think like with Ronaldo, we're not, this isn't, you know, this isn't 2018. This isn't 2019 where you might have a guy who's off. I mean, Lord knows we gave James Shields 400 plus innings as a starter during, I guess it was at some point in this rebuild, right?
Yes.
So we're not, that's not going to happen. So I think you're going to have a lot more of a hit and run as a worse guy. Billy Hamilton going to have a terrible couple, or just underperforming couple weeks, be negative war, get released, and he still could end up qualifying as the worst player. I don't see a guy like, I don't see anybody who's going to be contributing significantly to this team continuously underperforming with war. I mean, there's not going to be an Edwin, even Edwin Encarnacion in a full season, even under Ricky Renteria, was not going to get 500, 600 plate appearances, even though it sure seemed like it might. And I think Ronaldo Lopez is the same situation. You're probably seeing him similar to me where, you know, he's going to get a spot start. He might get a little time up and maybe what he does with it is not so good. He ends up, you know, he ends up on the negative end and everybody else is pretty much even or positive, and that's going to qualify him as the worst pitcher.
Right. Yes. The bullpen is just super solid in my opinion. And I couldn't really think of any reliever who will get any kind of sufficient or significant playing time who I would imagine would be in the negative category. I think all the starters will also clear the threshold, but Lopez, or at least I should specify all the starters who will begin the season as in the rotation will qualify. But yeah, Lopez, I'm not confident will get there. Maybe Ethan Katz will be able to work some magic, but I wouldn't bank on it. So that's kind of my rationale behind him being the least valuable pitcher.
You know, Joe, I never thought of myself as so much of an iconoclast, but when I do these podcasts, boy, it really seems like a lot of my takes are an outlier. And hopefully I present those takes in a gregarious and engaging fashion. But not only was I the outlier when it comes to picking the White Sox to actually fall short, just short of the playoffs, but probably the weirdest category I decided to throw out there for our little poll is whether Tony La Russa will return to manage next year. And it doesn't seem like that crazy a stretch that something is going to happen. They win the World Series and he retires. He has more off-field incidents. He determines that he just can't take it. He can't take the winning. He can't take the losing. He can't take the media. But yet it appears, at least until somebody else edits, no one else thinks that Tony La Russa will not be back in 2022. And I understand this might be wishful thinking. I got nothing against Tony. You know, I got nothing against Tony. I just think there's a decent chance. Okay, maybe it's not more than 50%. So I'm being a little bit mischievous here, but it's not a zero chance.
Yes, it's not a zero chance. I do have a question for one of the things you just said. You said if there are more incidents that he won't be back. I don't think, just judging from how things played out in the past offseason with the timing of the hire and the information that was revealed right around that time, it would have to be one heck of an incident, in my opinion, for him not to be around. And it's not, and he doesn't, it won't be deserved if he has certainly another similar kind of thing. He wouldn't deserve a job, but would I put it past it? Like, would I put it past Jerry for him to keep him around? I would not.
There's certainly a way to rationalize it away. And perhaps I'm being intentionally, innocent here in taking the White Sox at their word, because in that revelatory piece, for once, by Bob Nightingale, where it was revealed that nobody knew about this incident but Jerry Reinsdorf, which was buried nicely tucked away in that story, but seemed to be definitely the lead. It was also mentioned that it was clear to La Russa that, or they made it clear to him that if there was anything else, and that could be anything, it doesn't have to be that he decides to have a few too many scotches, that, you know, there was going to be pretty much Joel Tyler. Now, I get it. There's a way to spin worse stuff than what he did to say, oh, hey, listen, you know, he's never murdered anybody before. Come on. But I'm going to take them at their word because I think there's a lot of egg on face, and I understand Jerry doesn't care. But at some point, something's got to give. So anyway, this is sort of a silly column, and apparently nobody wanted to back me on it. So okay, listen, again, I'm not wanting it to happen, but I think it's a lot bigger question mark than I guess everybody else does, and it's clearly not 100% lock. But you're right in saying, Joe, that the White Sox will find a way to spin it and keep him around, and pretty much Tony leaves when he wants to leave, and so we could get 15 years of Tony La Russa. Who the heck knows?
Ooh. That would be something.
Now, on that note, why don't we take a little break? We're going to talk a little bit more broadly about Major League in general, because again, Joe, you sort of played out your playoffs in your piece, and everybody else decided to take a stab at division picks and MVPs and such. We can dig into that a little bit, not as Sox specific, although there are some White Sox award winners in our predictions. We will get to that in just a second. We got one commercial break for those on the podcast. If you're watching us, just close your eyes very briefly, and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, White Sox fans, it's Brett Ballantini here, Southside Sox podcast number 31. We're on the cusp of the season, and as we should on the cusp of the season, we should be looking at what the season's going to play out as. And gosh, seems like a dozen plus of us on staff have made our predictions. Joe Reesus is joining me here for this podcast. Actually took the time to really write out a pretty fun, entertaining, and probably fairly accurate. I'm going to give him enough credit that this was well thought of to know that some of this stuff is actually going to happen. Look at not just the White Sox season, but the Major League season in general. So let's just start as we broaden this to the Major Leagues. The strongest teams in both leagues in your mind, and is it close?
Yeah, I said for the National League, I went just with the chalk pick. I went with the Dodgers. And in the AL, I did the same thing. I believe, at least I think, the Yankees are the normal pick, I suppose. And I do believe it is closer than a lot of people will think. For example, I do think the Padres will make it the NL West race interesting. The Dodgers won't have a huge breakaway over them. I think I really admire the Padres' ability to really go all in this offseason and really build their roster in a variety of areas, even beyond what was necessary, so that in case they have bad injury luck, that they won't have a huge drop off when they have to tap into their depth. So much credit to the Padres this offseason. And I think that they'll have to play in the wild card game simply because they're in the same division as the Dodgers. But I give them a lot of credit for the moves that they made this offseason. For the AL, I think it's not as close. I do feel pretty strongly about the Yankees being the number one team there. This will be a kind of an unpopular opinion, but
just get me off the hook. Give an unpopular opinion. Get me off the hook, Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have the Twins as being the number two team in the AL by record, and I have the Astros as number three. So not.
Yeah, you're really going in hard with the villain. You're leaning in hard to the villains, Joe.
Very much.
All right, yeah. Direct the hate mail. Sorry, Joe. Hate throwing you under the bus. Direct the hate mail to Joe. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Twins are the second best team in the American League. Get out of here. Well, it's interesting to look at these lists, and this is probably a product of us being way more interested in and familiar with the American League, but the diversity in answers for both best team and worst team in the AL are all over the place. It may speak to the weakness of the league compared to the NL as well. Whereas with the NL, it's like a couple teams in either category. It's sort of more clear cut. And that's probably a product of us not caring as much about the National League. So let me spin it this way for you. We care about the Central, right? We're playing NL Central teams this year again. We care about the Centrals. They seem fairly clearly to be the worst divisions in baseball. So tell me this, Joe, even if that isn't true, but tell me, which Central's worse?
The NL Central is worse. When I was working on this piece, I was looking at the NL Central rosters, and I went into it with kind of the belief that, okay, this division is pretty weak, so maybe there was a little bit of confirmation bias at play here. But when I was looking kind of through the depth charts and kind of making my judgments on how many wins each team will have in that division, it was even weaker than I imagined. As far as there's no breakaway winner here, and the Cardinals, who I think will win the division, they're just not that good. Maybe they can surprise me, but I mean, yeah, I think 86 will be enough to win that division. And yeah, that's, I would not say the same about the AL Central.
Yeah, I mean, I know everybody hates projections and they get all upset about them, and we should never even talk about them or look at them or pretend they exist. But I recall that Pecota had, I think they had, at least when they first came out, I think Milwaukee was the division winner, but the win total was really low. It was like an 85, 86 win total, I think. I mean, it seems uniformly some sort of truism where the AL Central is going to have a team breaking 90 wins. I think that's a safe given, and it could be up to three. Still don't think they're going to go deep 90 wins. I don't know if there's an NL Central team capable of that, and I don't think there are multiple teams capable of that. So maybe a Cardinals or a Brewers or a Cubs somehow run away with it in that division. But man, that's a bad division. I mean, I'm in complete agreement with you. And that division might need to really, based on these last couple, 3 years of performance, Major League Baseball might need to look into relegation of just the division. Mm-hmm. Maybe we trade them out for some, one of those weird spinoff international league. Oh, they don't call it that anymore, right? It's just AAA now.
Oh, yes.
Right. So the North, AAA North could maybe replace the NL Central because they're awful. And that's good news for us, because we're going to hopefully get to feast again. I think it's going to be easier to feast on NL Central than it is going to be on even the Tigers and the Royals.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm looking forward to facing the Pirates very much. A lot of good memories last year against them, and hopefully more to come.
Yeah. You're going to have the rotation like, okay, they're already counting out where their start's going to land. Okay. Am I going to get my no chance? Okay. All right. Hold on. And G. Lito's like, wait, I get first dibs. So let's arrange this. Let's see. Well, no love for the Rays. I don't know what's up with that, but that's all right. Okay. You just got to prove it every year. That's fine. It's fine. When the Rays are the best team in the American League, I'll accept some of your apologies out there, Southside Sox. And when they don't, which is likely going to happen, I'll just pretend this article doesn't exist. Maybe I'll even make it disappear. But what other stuff jumps out at you? Was there, as you're digging into this, because again, in your piece, you've given us full division records. You played out the playoffs. Is there something as you were going in? Did you go in thinking the team was going to be stronger than they appeared as the playoff matchups came together? You know, were there upsets or were you tempted to, you know, have a Cinderella team?
I wouldn't count this as a Cinderella team, but so many people just kind of have the Dodgers as like a sure thing that maybe they could be considered this. I have the Padres upset, winning the wild card game and then upsetting the Dodgers in the NLDS and have them going all the way. In fact, I already praised them earlier, so I don't have to praise them again. But yes, hooray for the Padres, I guess. I guess, this is an unpopular opinion again. The Twins playoff losing streak will finally end. It would be cool if it didn't. I would happily be wrong about that one. It has to end at some point, right? Like it's got to. Come on.
I guess it doesn't matter if they finish in first and the Sox in second. If Sox squeak into the playoffs and still manage to say they upset the Twins or they last longer than the Twins, then what does the regular season matter? So I'm all for this streak continuing. I want them to push that streak so far that no one can ever catch it. Oh, I know, yeah, the Blackhawks are on that list of like the worst droughts of all time. I think the Blackhawks are maybe third or fourth across all sports. Mm-hmm. I'm glad the Twins have put them in the rearview mirror. And yeah, let's. Okay, I'm going to predict, even though I say they're going to win the division. Yeah, they're going to get swept. They keep it going. I'm not putting them in the World Series, so I can say they're going to get swept when they get knocked out. So yeah, dump them again. All right, two of the awards races seem to be as givens. So I'm going to ask you which you think is more of a given. Is it Mike Trout winning AL MVP or Ke'Bryan Hayes winning the National League Rookie of the Year? Because we both picked both of those guys ourselves. So what do you think is more of a lock?
I would have to go with Trout. He is just such a proven talent. I have a lot of difficulty putting all of my eggs into a rookie's basket compared to Trout's. Wow. I really like how Hayes has improved, and I do think he'll have a really solid season coming up, and he'll be one of the rare bright spots for Pittsburgh. But it's when Mike Trout is on, as long as he's in his prime, it's very tough to pick against him. And it's pretty much no rookie, no matter how talented, I'll very rarely feel more confident picking any rookie of the year over with more confidence than a Mike Trout MVP.
I know you have a lot of awareness of and interest in, and probably rooting interest in Japanese players coming over to the majors. We have support for Shohei Ohtani as an MVP. What do you think his season is going to play out as? It seems like there's a lot of moving parts, and it seems like it's going to be tough for this guy to sustain a full strong season the way they have set him up playing. What are your thoughts? You think he's going to have a nice bounce back year that's going to put the Angels more in the mix than they normally are?
I do think he'll have a strong season. I got to be honest, when making this prediction, his name didn't really come to mind as far as an MVP candidate is concerned. It would be very cool to see, absolutely. I do think that he'll put up a really nice season from an offensive perspective. He'll be one of the better players for the Angels, but I don't think he'll make like the monster impact, and would love to be proven wrong here, but I don't see him as an MVP player. That's redundant, but I see him as above average, but not an MVP candidate. I don't think he'll be in that conversation.
They're asking him to do a lot, and that is a big burden. And unfortunately, the way the Angels are constructed still currently, I mean, you sort of got to go in with, I mean, heck, if Trout could pitch, they'd throw him because they need everything they can. They seem to always be on the outside looking in, and probably at best, in most cases, I think third place team in the AL West. I know some folks haven't making the playoffs or being darn close, but okay, let's end this on a White Sox note. And besides Crochet, who we're picking as our best rookie, and Giolito, who's sort of a given, so that's boring. Luis Robert, you know, I know is an outlier for you, but I mean, everybody has hopes that he's going to do really well. Who's a guy on the roster you think is going to be a pleasant surprise for us this year?
Pleasant surprise. I like, you know, I'm going to go with Dylan Cease on this one. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have their reservations from how he performed last year and how his ERA was very misleading. Like everyone pretty much understands this. His ERA would lead people to believe that he pitched way better than he actually did. Mm-hmm. He deserved to have a much higher ERA than what he actually had. So I can completely understand the reservations there. I'm going to go with my bold prediction as cease being the biggest beneficiary of the Ethan Katz era. And I think he will have he'll go from being like probably, yeah, he was sub replacement level, at least if you're going by a FIP based calculator. he really struggled last year. Like his strikeout to walk ratio was very poor. Gave up a lot of homers as well. So wasn't pretty. I think all three of his metrics, like strikeouts, strikeout rate, walk rate, and home run rate, I think they'll all increase this year, and it'll be significant to where by the end of the season, we'll have confidence in him as a number four starter, possibly even number three.
Okay, Joe, bold pick, picking the guy to surprise you just threw 11 strikeouts and no walks in his final Cactus League appearance. Okay, bold. All right, but hey, listen, I didn't mean to ask you about this, so I'm glad that you brought Cease up. In your WAR estimates, you have Rodon as being pretty low as a fifth starter. Cease relatively high. I think you had him at 2 WAR. Is the Rodon prediction more have 20 starts before I'm going to give you too much WAR? Is it a matter of just, listen, the guy has been too fragile to really count too much on? Or do you think his performance actually is not going to be consistent with what we've seen in Arizona?
I just have a lot of questions as far as his health is concerned. It's been a challenge to have him both be very effective and very healthy at the same time. I recall in 2018, he had a pretty decent stretch during the first half of the season. And right around the All-Star break, that he was he went on a hot streak, and that was probably the peak of his career, at least up until this point. But again, just staying on the field was just a challenge for him. And so since then, he's pretty much either been kind of mediocre as far as his performance is concerned, and or the health just hasn't been there. So it's just been difficult to rely on him. And it's a lot more difficult as a result for me to count on him to have a bounce back season.
The more interesting stuff that all of you listeners are probably paying attention to are the White Sox predictions. They are all online in a story that you can take a look at if you haven't already. We've got variants from 98 wins from Rob Colletti, who's just absolutely gone bonkers with that prediction. God bless him and his confidence. All the way down to just 86 wins from Tommy Barbie, but he mitigates that by still having that be, I think Tommy thinks the White Sox are playing in the NL Central, because with just 86 wins, they're still winning the division. So even some of the more dour predictions, like even yours, Joe, I mean, technically you might be second lowest here,
yeah,
87 wins, but you're still giving them the playoffs. So even the most dour takes on the White Sox still have a pleasant ending to the season, because they're making the playoffs. Just one person sees them falling short of the playoffs. And no, I am not going to go back and edit that. Prove it to me, White Sox, okay? I'm not going to go cuckoo like Colletti. I do not know where 98 wins. But boy, him and James Fox. James Fox, I believe, said, and this might be published in the piece, I'm not sure, I think he said that the Twins and the White Sox might be the two best teams in the American League. And that would be awesome. I'm going to just sit back and wait for that to happen, but that would be awesome. What a race it would be. It would be a really, really fun summer for that kind of dogfight. Not who backs into the division win, but who actually goes out there and takes it like a 10 of 11 to end the season. That would be pretty cool. And I think that's what James is sort of sniffing at. So I'm all for it. I guess I'm a little older than most of you guys. So
I will not roast you for not having them in the playoffs. I nearly didn't have them in there. So it's totally understandable. And your, I guess, secret is safe with me.
Yeah, this is last weekend of the season stuff. I mean, I don't think most of us see this getting wrapped up, whether it's a division title for the White Sox, for those who pick them that way, or even making the playoffs. I don't know. This is not going to be wrapped up early September. Pretty doubtful, because even if the team's doing really well, chances are there's going to be somebody chasing them. You know, I mean, okay, so maybe they're projected a 96 at their early September and Minnesota's 92. I don't think there's going to be any easy breathing for 162 games this season. That's going to make it a lot of fun to cover and watch. And, you know, hey, everybody out there listening, reading, keep doing it because we got you for 162 games starting on Thursday. We got a ton of content ramping up to that, including all these prediction articles. But we're going to have, we got the alternate site stuff coming right after opening day. We're going to have a couple podcasts on opening day, pregame, postgame, usual traditional live game thread, even though the game's late. So hopefully many of you will be able to hang out late enough to stay up for that and end the game early in the morning. We'll see how many of us are still standing when that's done. Hopefully it'll be something to celebrate, so it'll be easier to be standing. But a lot of stuff coming in here the second half of the week, including a lot of optimism about the season, as evidenced in what we're talking about here. Joe, so thanks for doing such a great detailed job with your predictions and for everybody else on staff for sort of throwing in and doing a pretty massive participation in how we think the season is going to play out for the majors and in general, and more specifically the White Sox. So thanks, Joe, for hopping on. We'll be talking again soon. And I don't know, maybe 10, 20, 30 games in, we'll reconvene and see if my more wins but no playoffs is looking fresher, or your modest wins make the playoffs is more fresh. I don't know.
Yes, it was my pleasure, and thank you for having me on. It was great to discuss, and I look forward to seeing how it all plays out. And as a fellow Eastern Standard Time White Sox fan, I'm prepared to stay up all night on Thursday.
It is going to be a bleary-eyed Friday, but so be it. It's what we got to do. Opening day, Thursday. We got a lot more stuff coming at you before then, including a ton of stuff on Thursday. But the podcast will keep coming rapid fire, and that goes for the writing as well. So keep on reading, keep on watching, keep on listening. Thanks for doing that, and thanks for sticking with me and Joe through this podcast. And please, in the comments, throw down your predictions. Somebody tell me I'm right. Or somebody tell Joe he's right. Come on. Either way, it works. All right. Thanks for listening.